Proverbs chapter 18. And we have been talking about what the Bible has to say in the book of Proverbs on relationships and how to develop and how to strengthen our relationships, how to repair broken relationships. We've been looking at this topic of wisdom and healthy relationships. And this is a very important topic, something that probably from time to time, no matter how things are going in our interpersonal relationships, it's probably a good idea for us to stop and to reflect on the things that are in front of us. I want to go ahead and read the verse again and then remind you of a couple of the details that we talked about last week, and then we will jump into the rest of our study. Proverbs 18:24 says this, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother." What we saw from our study is that the purpose of the Proverbs that we've been looking at were to give young people, and obviously not everybody here is a young person, but to give people, specifically those who are young and beginning to develop those relationships, is to give them good skills and good wisdom so that they can be successful in building good relationships and peacemakers in helping those who don't have good relationships. We saw that God wants us to be skillful relationship builders. And so last week, we continued on from some principles that we started with to some skills that are important for us to develop. I'm going to remind you of the three skills we talked about last week, and then we'll pick up with the third. The first skill was this. We need to realize that what we say and how we say it is equally important. You know, a lot of times we say the right thing, but we don't say it the right way. Or we maybe need to say something, but we use language that is stronger than it needs to be in that particular situation. And so in Proverbs 15:1, we saw that what we say and how we say it is extremely important to us being able to communicate and us being able to maintain good relationships. Skill number two is that we need to realize that at times we need to lay groundwork before we try to restore a broken relationship. Proverbs 21:14 talked about giving a gift in secret that is meant to calm down a person's anger. The idea is that when we have a conflict with someone, it's not productive to go straight into trying to resolve that sometimes, because we're heated, they're heated, and we need to calm down, think clearly, and then once we can calm down, we'll be able to have a productive conversation. And so there are times that you have to do some things to lay the groundwork so that you're in a position to actually have a productive conversation. And sometimes you need somebody else to be in that position. That's what a mediator does. A mediator goes between two people who are at odds. They're not at odds with either of those people. They're supposed to be kind of neutral. And basically what they do is they help smooth out the field so that when those people come together, they have a productive conversation. We then came to skill number three. We need to realize that bringing up past offenses is distasteful and damages relationships. I want to go ahead and just mention this again. Proverbs 17:9 says, "He that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends." Now, this passage is not teaching us that we never confront issues that are between us and other people. In fact, we're going to find out a little bit later tonight that if we don't deal with matters and we let time go on, a lot of times it actually makes those issues more difficult to resolve, more challenging. There are times that we have to address issues, but not every single issue that can creep between two people is worth getting into the conflict with. There are times that we have to let certain things go. They're not big enough issues to really go to fight over that issue. But once we've actually resolved the matter, we've dealt with it, we've apologized, we've given forgiveness, we've sought restoration, it's very important that once we've done that, we don't go back and repeat that matter and throw that in the face of a person. You know, a lot of times we do things like this, and it really comes down to us being impulsive. Rather than truly forgiving and truly letting something go and trying to move forward and build a relationship, we kind of hold that in the back and say, okay, I've said what I'm supposed to say, but you cross that line. I'm going back there, and I'm going back here, and here, and here, and I'm going to show there's this pattern. Let somebody else show the pattern. You don't need to be the one who shows the pattern when you're in conflict with another person. It's a very important principle. And so when somebody wrongs us and they seek restoration, we need to forgive them, and we need to choose not to bring that issue up again. When we do that, it's another way of saying, I don't really forgive you, or I don't really trust you, or you owe me something, and I'm going to bring that back up to your attention. Let's be people who learn to develop that skill and that discipline of forgiving and leaving it in the past. Very important. Skill number four, we need to realize that time between people who are at odds tends to make things worse, not better. I know that we've heard this statement, and I know I've said this to people. You know, time heals all wounds. That's not true. Now, time does sometimes heal wounds. I'm not saying that it never works that way. There are times that a little time goes on and everybody kind of calms down and they agree, you know, that issue was kind of small and insignificant. But that doesn't always happen. In fact, sometimes when there's an issue that is between individuals, and instead of addressing the issue and dealing with the issue, coming to, you know, face to face with that reality and then dealing with it in a biblical manner, sometimes people, we could say, kick the can down the road. They just push it off and defer it. Look down in Proverbs 17, verse 14, at what the passage says. Very, very interesting. The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. I'm going to put it in this kind of, I'm going to put it this way. When you have a little matter and you don't address it, and you just leave it there, but you allow that little thing to fester over a period of time, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse until it becomes a huge, huge problem. I want you to think of what happens when you have a little leak in your roof. Now, I'll just say, if you go in this closet over here, just going to say, there's a little spot in there where it's got like a brown stain on the ceiling, right? Maybe you didn't know that. Well, let me tell you something. That brown spot, which is, it's not a continuing leak. It's something that happened years ago. That brown spot is not something that, as soon as the leak started, the little space where that water was starting to come in, that's not when you got the brown spot, okay? In other words, that spot that caused that, it was way up in the top here. And there was a little place where there was a weakness in the shingles or a little puncture in the roof, and water kind of seeped into there. But it didn't come through right away. It took some time. And so over the course of months, that water kept seeping in and kept seeping in, and it started running down these rafters. And it eventually ran all the way down to where it got to a place where it couldn't run anymore. It had to drop down. And that's where the brown spot was. And that's the way it is. You might have a little hole in something. And you go, ah, I noticed there's like a little drip there in my plumbing. Well, it's just a little drip. It isn't a big deal. And you leave it like that for a couple weeks, couple months. And guess what? One day you realize there's this whole rotten mess under my sink. There's all kinds of water damage down there. How in the world did that happen? It was just a little drip. A little drip that was left alone and not dealt with. And folks, that's how strife and contention are. When we have an issue with another person, and it's an issue that is bothering us, and we really do need to deal with it, but we just defer it, and we push it away, and we don't deal with it, and we let it go for weeks, and for months, and for years, all of a sudden, all of that begins to develop under the surface, and then at a moment, boom, it comes to the top, and we see it, and it's not pretty at all. We need to realize that when there are problems and we just let them fester, they will not get better. They're going to get worse. So we need to be people who are willing to resolve issues when they come up. Don't allow things to fester. Don't delay addressing issues between you and others. Maintain healthy relationships by involving constant taking care of the little issues that creep in between you and others. It's very, very important that we do that. Skill number five, we need to realize that we cannot make peace with someone whose heart is full of envy. It's kind of an interesting verse. Let's go to Proverbs 27, verse 4. Wrath is cruel. Anger is outrageous. But who is able to stand before envy? Let me say that again. Wrath is cruel. Anger's outrageous. But who is able to stand before envy? I remember that there was a time in my life when I was younger where I idealistically believed that I could get along with everybody that's out there. Anybody ever been there before? Yeah, I can get along with anybody. Well, you can get along with a lot of people. But there are some people that though you have no issue with them, they're going to have an issue with you. And when a person becomes jealous of another individual, that jealousy, that envy, is something that will eat at their heart in such a way that it will not allow you to have peace with them, no matter what you do. In fact, it's interesting, in Romans chapter 12, verse 18, this is what Paul says. He says, "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." That's a really interesting verse. Now, I think sometimes people run to this verse a little too quickly, and they just write people off. I can't get along with everybody. This is one of those situations they write people off too soon. Don't do that. But what this verse does tell you is that there are times that you've done everything in your power to try to have a right relationship with somebody. You have cleared the wrongs that are on your side to the extent that you can, but they still won't forgive. They still won't let go. They still won't resolve. When a person is envious, this is the position that they're in. And I think that there are times in relationships with people that we have to realize this is not an issue that I can actually resolve, and I have to let this go. That word cruel is interesting. Anger lies at the root of dehumanizing behavior. Vicious personal attacks, evil acts of revenge. When people get really angry, they can do some terrible things. They can act like a person isn't even human. That's what anger can do. He talks about anger being outrageous. The idea is that it goes beyond the limits of what is reasonable behavior. And that's what happens when people get in that position. But his point is this: envy's even worse. You get that? The dehumanizing of another individual because of wrath, that outrageous attitude of being willing to go beyond the normal restraints of behavior, and he says, envy's far worse than that. I think the point of that verse is this: every action is going to be analyzed critically, and the worst will always be assumed of a person who's in this position. If you treat an envious person well, then they're going to feel like you're belittling them. You're looking down on them, that you don't really respect them. If you treat them, you distance yourself, then that's going to be interpreted another way. In other words, there are times that you just cannot win and you have to pull back. Let's move on to five self-checks that are very important. Let's say that we're in a situation where we have a conflict with somebody. And I don't mean like we have a little spat now and again, but I mean there's a real deep, serious issue going on between us and someone else. And we think we've kind of exhausted our opportunities to get the issue resolved. We kind of feel like we're in that place where, like the last skill, this person's envious. They can't be helped. I can't help them. I just pull back and just let it go. There's a couple of questions that we probably should ask ourselves before we come to a place like that with other people. Some self-checks when we have contention. To ask the question, how much of this issue is really on them versus how much of it is actually on me? What part am I personally playing right now in the continuation of this issue? Self-check number one. Do I think the worst of others? It's kind of an interesting thing. I've been here before, and I'm sure you have too. Somebody does something wrong, and it's wrong. It's clearly wrong. And they do something wrong repeatedly, over and over and over again. And then you start to get in this place where you become very cynical about this individual. Everything they do is interpreted as negatively as possible. What is really going on in your heart when you get to a place like that? And we get this way with people. And when we get this way with people, it's very, very dangerous. When I think the worst of people, my mind generally is full of lies about them. That's what Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 20. Listen to this passage. It says this: deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil. Let me read that again. Deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil. In other words, when a person's imagination is always going to the worst possible scenario, what Solomon is saying is that that person is actually self-deceived. I've found this many, many times. You have two people, they're really upset and you're trying to mediate the problem. Or maybe I'm one of the people that I'm really upset and somebody's trying to help me mediate the problem. And, you know, I'm out there, you know, I'm out running in the morning. I'm lifting weights. You know, when you're lifting weights, your mind really gets going. And I'm thinking all this terrible stuff, like, they said this, and this is what they meant, and they did this, and this is what they meant, and I asked them to do this, and they bailed out in this kind of way, and we have all this stuff in our head. And then somebody has a sit down, and I lay out all the reasons I'm upset, and I have nailed them to the wall. And one by one, they answer, and I'm like, wrong there. Wrong there. Okay. Wrong there. And we go through the whole list and we realize something. Everything that I believed about them wasn't true. Everything that I believed. Why? Because we get to the cynical position where we basically analyze every little detail what people are doing, and they don't even think about it. They don't even think twice about it. Those issues that were so big to us, we were wrong about them. That's exactly what he's saying. Deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil. But to the counselor of peace is joy. When you think the worst of people, I'm not saying you're always wrong, but many times you are wrong about them. And when you give people the benefit of the doubt, you put yourself in a position to be able to actually have peace with them. Lots and lots of conflicts between people are, if all the facts could be laid on the table and people could set their emotions aside and just look at the facts, a lot of times it'd be pretty easy to resolve the issue. But because all those things going on in the head have built up and built up and built up, they've lost their objectivity. Our mind has a tendency to go to irrational extremes. How many times you're going to make a decision and you plan out all the possible scenarios of where this could go? And you planned out 25 different possible ways. And when you get done, you find out there was a 26th and you didn't think about it. And it was so different than what you anticipated. Sometimes that's how we are with other people. When we think about other people's actions and motives, we are always limited in what we can know. However, our mind is always ready to fill in the gaps. Just keep that in mind. You know, you get a text message, you get an email, you get a phone call, you see a post on Facebook, you know, somebody said they're going to do something and they, you know, they bail out and you're like, ah, I know what they really meant. I know what they really were thinking there. And we just assume things, and those assumptions can really be destructive. When we assume the best of others and think towards peaceable outcomes, it brings joy to us and joy to those around us. And this is a really important principle for us to keep in our minds. We must learn to think the best of the people around us so that we move towards peaceable outcomes. Check number two. Do I keep meticulous records of others' wrongs? You know, a lot of times when we get to the place with somebody where we say, enough's enough, I've given everything that I have, I've done all that I can do, and I'm just going to chalk this one up, I'm done with this one. Ask yourself the question, have you been keeping meticulous records of their wrongs? You say, well, why does that matter? Well, if I'm not getting along with other people, or excuse me, if I demand justice in interpersonal disputes, the Bible tells me that I'm a fool. That's pretty strong. Listen to what it says in Proverbs 18:6. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calleth for strokes. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calleth for strokes. The idea is this: that person keeps very meticulous, detailed records of every single offense that somebody has made of them, and they want absolute justice on all of those points. You know, you have a problem with somebody, and you say, okay, well, you know, tell me, you know, what's the issue? And you say, well, give me everything that you got so I have a good idea. And they come back and it's like 2 hours later, like, you got a problem with them, don't you? Well, the bottom line is that when you take that mentality into resolving conflict with somebody, it's impossible for you to get resolve. You know why that is? Because there's no way you can keep up with all that stuff. I want you to think about salvation for a moment. When we get saved, what does God demand of us to understand, to acknowledge, and to do toward Him? He expects us to see ourselves as sinners before Him who have absolutely no hope of forgiveness apart from the work of Christ, and we turn humbly to Him and we trust in what His Son did for us. Aren't you glad that God doesn't require us to list out every single sin we have ever committed in our entire life and one by one choose to say, I'm sorry I did that, forgive me. Number two, I'm sorry I did that, forgive me. Number three, sorry I did that, forgive me. And by the time we turn 90 years old, we still got more. God doesn't do that with us. Repentance, acknowledging of my sin, turning to Him and trusting in His finished work, and He forgives me and He redeems me and it's done. But that's not what we do with other people. We got an unbelievable list that they can never even come to begin to address. And we say, well, wouldn't you get through the list and we'll be okay. Folks, please don't do that with people. The fool enters into contention and his mouth calls for strokes. I want a pound of flesh for every single time you've wronged me. That's the attitude. God doesn't do that with us. Let's not do it with each other. Check number three. Am I having issues with someone? Well, if it is, I'm not getting along with them because there's pride between us. Now, we tend to kind of look at it this way. I'm cool. They're not. Pride's on their side, not on my side. I'm good. Okay? Yeah, we've been there. Folks, no matter how you cut it, there's going to be some level of pride on your side. It is. It's just how it works. Now, I'm not saying that once you've been confronted or once you've thought through the matter and once you begin to desire to be reconciled with that person, that you're still holding on to pride, okay? It can be that there's a contention between two people, and the person that's willing to take that step first to resolve the issue, that's the one who swallowed their pride and said, I want to make this right. The one who says, you come to me first, that's the proud person. That's the person that keeps the contention there. The person who's willing to take the step genuinely to resolve the matter is the one who swallowed their pride. And that's how contention gets dealt with. As long as you have somebody who pulls back and says, you come to me on my terms, and if I'm convinced that you're serious, then I will go ahead and make this right with you. Folks, it ain't gonna happen. You can't do that. You can't handle people that way. Proverbs 13:10 says, only by pride cometh contention. I love this statement, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Why do you think he talks about somebody being well-advised? Here's what it is. When I'm proud, I don't see it. And neither do you. You know how I begin to recognize I'm proud? somebody who's got enough guts to tell me comes alongside, and they begin to show me that. Somebody who has good sense, a gracious spirit, enough love for me to actually come alongside. That person is the one who's able to open my eyes to see what's going on. And sometimes it's God. It may not be an individual who comes to you. It may be God in his own way he begins to do that. But the idea is this. The person who's proud keeps the contention going. And the person who gets good, solid advice, who's able to open up that situation and lay it out and say, here's where the issue is. That person is the one who has wisdom. And that's how issues are resolved. Pride is at the heart of every conflict. We share in the conflict on some level. And the strongest person, being the one who swallows his pride first, is going to be the one who always reaches out to the weaker. When you have an issue with somebody and you're both backed in your corner, somebody's got to give. Make it be you. And it's amazing how sometimes when somebody's willing to take that step, then the walls begin to start crumbling down. Not always, not immediately, but that's how it takes place. Check number four. Do I talk too much about my interpersonal problems? What's up, man? Why do I got to go there, right? You know, I've been there myself so many times. I go back to high school. Think about some of the little issues I dealt with when I was in high school. And I told everybody what's going on. Well, guess what I was doing? I was isolating the person I had an issue with. The more that I told people about it, the more difficult it was for me to resolve it. The more I talked about it, the more I made the issue deeper. It's interesting what it says in Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. In other words, when you talk a lot, you got to deal with the consequences a lot. And when you learn to hold back and to be settled and calm and not tell everybody what's going on, that is when you're able to enjoy the fruit of not talking too much. You know, the truth is that we shouldn't talk to people about our interpersonal problems unless they are directly involved in helping to resolve the matter. That's a really important thing for us to consider. If I'm going to this person and they are not going to help to resolve this matter, then it's a gossip. If I'm going to this person and I'm giving them this information, they're now in a position of burden that they need to help to resolve the matter. And if I don't have any intention of seeing them come to help resolve that matter, or I realize that this person's not in a position to resolve that matter, then I don't need to go to them about the issue. It's very important that we learn this principle and that we develop that discipline to do that. I'll tell you, I can raise my hand and say I've been guilty of this one a lot over the years. And I've had to learn the hard way. And that's why Solomon's telling his children, listen, when you talk a lot, you're going to deal with the consequences of that. Check number five. Do I think that more things will improve my relationships? More wealth does not make people more happy. It doesn't develop deeper, healthier relationships. Now, I will say this. Wealth can get you temporary friends. Okay? It can get you temporary friends. Look at the story of the prodigal son. He had some great parties till his money ran out. Okay? But once his money ran out, what happened? All of his friends were gone. They're looking for somebody else who had some money, and somebody else who had some opportunity. The truth is that money can buy us friendships on a very superficial way. It can buy us temporary friendships, but money doesn't develop deep personal relationships. Actually, sometimes money ends up complicating those kinds of relationships. Notice what he says in Proverbs 15:17. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. It's kind of funny. A couple months back, we had a grill night and I was, you know, so excited about my garden. And so I brought this whole bag of lettuce, and I put it out there. It was this great salad, and not one person, including me, okay, actually, I will admit, not one person went and got lettuce because we wanted meat. It was a grill night. We want the beef, man. We want the chicken. We want the stuff that, you know, smells good on the grill, not the stuff that the rabbits eat in the garden, all right? And other animals eat in the garden. The truth is, we understand, especially these people understood, that having an ox in the stall was an indication that you were wealthy. Not everybody had the luxury of eating meat like that. So interesting. Other parts of the world, some people don't really have meat in their diet. It's kind of a luxury. He says it'd be better to be eating your veggies and have peace in the house than to be very wealthy, enjoying this wonderful meal, but there's contention there. I think his point is this. Money and stuff doesn't buy happiness. It doesn't buy relationships. Not the kind that the book of Proverbs is driving toward. And so we need to keep this in check. Don't think that your material possessions are going to make you happy and give you better relationships. Very, very important. I want to conclude with this statement. God wants you to be a skillful relationship builder. Question is, are we willing to invest our time and energies into making that happen? Building relationships isn't easy. Building relationships involves the development of skills. There are some people that, unfortunately, in the early stages of us developing in these areas, they end up kind of getting the short end of the stick, okay? They do. It's not that we want it to be that way, but the fact is, when we're immature, we hurt people and they hurt us. But thankfully, as we go through life and as we develop and we mature, we learn from those wounds that we give. We learn from those wounds we've received. We learn from those conflicts. And what happens? We become much stronger at developing relationships. We become much more skillful in helping other people relate to one another properly. We learn how to invest our energy and our time into seeing good, solid relationships. Are we willing to ask the hard questions of ourselves so that God is able to prick our consciences and work so that we change? Our encouragement tonight is this: may we all honor the Lord in how we relate to others. Let's bow together for prayer, please. Father, I thank you for the book of Proverbs. Some very hard-hitting principles here. Things that I personally have not done well in. And every person in here could probably bear testimony to times where they haven't as well. Father, help us to learn from the past. Help us to learn from our mistakes. Help us to learn from this godly instruction. And help us to develop good, solid, strong relationships where we can thrive, where we can be able to help other people. I pray that we take these things and really put them into practice in our personal lives. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.